Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Artists Helping Artists. We are the number one art show on Blog Talk Radio. This is Leslie Seda back in Southern California, and I have my dear friend Margaret Sheldon on the line. Margaret, say hello.
I'm here. I'm here, and I'm down to one crutch, so yay team.
Well, for those of you that don't know, Margaret had knee replacement surgery, and it's been almost 2 weeks, right?
Almost 2 weeks, that's right.
Yeah.
And I've gone from a walker to two crutches to one crutch. So big successes today.
That's awesome.
It's all
good. That's awesome. I'm back in town. I just spent a week in, my husband calls it Wacko. It's our personal joke. It has nothing to do with the town itself. He thinks his wife is completely wacko. Waco, Texas, and then I went to Round Top, Texas. And very briefly, last Saturday, I did the first ever view of the inside of the house that we bought, which is a dump, truly a dump. But it's so exciting, you guys. I know, everyone's laughing. It's a fixer-upper project.
I love it.
We're not moving to Waco. We're going to fix it up and Airbnb it. And I am so excited because there's so much potential.
You should
be. I got my first contractor bid this morning, and it wasn't – I figured it was going to be way out of whack, but you know what? It wasn't too bad. Yeah. So, I think we can make this work. I hope
so.
Sure,
you can.
I'm not giving up my wraparound porch.
It won't be for lack of energy, that's for sure.
Oh yeah, very, very true. So,
anyway,
okay, we're not gonna like talk about the weather or anything. We're gonna go straight into today's show because we have brought back. We need a drum roll, please. We need some sound effects. Dream Atoll Perry, who was one of the original hosts on this show for many, many, many years, and now we are gonna catch up with her today, and she is calling in from, of course, Paris, France. And so, Dreema, I want to welcome you. Hello, hello.
Hello. Hello, everybody. I was thinking when I was walking the streets of Paris today, I thought it's one of those that needs a title. In a weird twist of events, Dreema actually becomes a guest on the show. Because it felt strange when I was kind of looking at that last time. I was like, oh, so I'm on the other end of this now. But
you are. But how great is it? You always said you were calling in when you were co-hosting, and I'm calling in from Paris, and then you'd pause.
I'd forgotten that.
To actually be in Paris, France, I feel like hopefully this is the direction all co-hosts go in.
I'm going to Waco. You're going to Paris, France.
I think I'd prefer to take Dreema's route, frankly. But what a treat.
Before we get started, for those of you that don't know Dreema, so Dreema and I met, we used to say through Match.com, which is not true, but we did meet online. And
we did.
She wanted to use some of my early paintings, I think, in like as something in your workshop. I can't even remember. It was so long ago, like 8 years ago. And we kind of met, and then we became really great friends. And then we started the AHA radio show. And then she dumped me after 2 years, which I always
Let's see.
Thank
you.
Goodness.
It was not a dump. It was not. This is my opportunity to always bring up. To anyone that in behind, and you've had some guest hosts over the year, and I know Margaret's really your right hand gal now.
Yes, she is.
But for anyone that does it behind the scenes, I'm still amazed. It's like it's still going because it's a lot of work.
It really
the
is.
Scenes. And so I mean, I had to, it was kind of like I had to save myself. It's like I couldn't keep up the pace. I mean, I'm not. I don't know what Leslie takes, and I'm not sure. And Margaret, are you about to eat? I don't know, but it takes a lot. That week rolls around really quickly. I always enjoy doing it. But it's a lot to keep up with. I would think, like, Thursday afternoon, I'm like, got another one done. But before I knew it was time, I'm like, oh, say, what's next? Where are the notes? Who are we contacting? What's, you know, it seemed like that come around lightning fast. So always, excuse me, honestly.
Sometimes.
I can't say thank you because you have kept this going. And it's really good information. It's on point, it is timely because it's, you know, you're always, every week it's something new, and so it's not outdated information, and it's a wonderful service for artists, and but it comes, I know from having been in the trenches, it takes a lot. So no dumping. Like I said, it was a matter of me just kind of trying to save myself. I didn't know if I could, how much longer I could keep up the pace. So,
you know, I'm totally
Margaret
kidding,
I don't know what to tell you because she's lured you in. I don't know what to tell you. I have no, we'll talk later, but yeah.
All I want to say,
someday
I'd like
we
to
have
say,
to do.
I don't know. I
was just going to say,
ahead.
Someday we have to do a behind the scenes of how we throw these shows together at the 23rd hour. I mean, it's pretty crazy, but we love it, so we do it, and we know no better,
yep.
which is
yeah.
crazy. But Dreema, I have to tell a little bit about you, because Dreema is kind of like, to me, like the person who is kind of like shaping the art world for the rest of us. Truly, I mean, you have been an artist for how many years now? 25, 30?
30.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not say, now I can't say what age I started because then it gets really dicey. So, you know,
yeah.
go here, but, yeah. I started when I was two.
Your teaching style and the way you teach your workshops kind of like, I think, kind of reformatted how most people teach. And then when you started teaching your online classes, it's just been unbelievable. And your gift of the way you write, your messages, the beauty in your words is something that I think we all aspire to. And now, you know, Dreema lives kind of like part-time in France with her charming husband. And, we all want to be like you.
Oh, it's only.
I don't know what to do with that intro there. you know, I don't even know what to say to that. But it's, yeah, I've been at it a long time. And I do love what I do, I have to say. And when I started teaching and doing the online workshops, all of that, I always feel like I've backed into more than what I actually had a genius outlook on, you know, because I always have to remind people every time I use the word genius in a sentence when I'm typing it out, I always misspell it. So, I always feel like I just go at things, I guess, kind of, you know, keep my head down and work and love what I do. And out of it, sometimes you start seeing things connect. The dots kind of start connecting. And I think it's true for everybody's life. It's just they all, you know, they kind of have to fall in there when they do. Some of the things that I, you know, when I first started out, I aspired to and everything never happened. And then, but some of the things I could have never envisioned that, you know, technology would be where we are now, that we're able to do what we do. Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't even dream that big when I started out. So now it's here and we can take advantage of a lot of those things. So it's life is a winding road for sure.
So if I asked, how are you, how would you answer that question?
How am I? Really fulfilled in what I'm doing, and that's probably what makes my heart the most happy. Mm-hmm. I say that a lot of them when I'm writing sometimes about what makes your heart happy. And it's not that it's all easy. There's a lot of work that goes for any person that's doing whatever their thing is in life. There's always a lot of work behind the scenes. But I think when you have kind of hit your passion on what you do, sometimes the work, you don't notice it as much. You do it, but it's kind of towards the direction of what you're wanting to be doing. And that for me, because I get, the funny thing is when I started with being online with blogging and stuff, was not writing. And I don't claim to be a great writer now, but I am a writer, you know, and I like to write. And the fact that I like to paint and write and I can do it now is a huge gift for me. I mean, it's something that, and I think with any creative endeavor, it kind of has to be first feed your own spirit. It's not about trying to do it so that someone else approves or someone else likes it. It's kind of nice if those things happen, but first and foremost, it sounds, you know, maybe really self-focused, but it's kind of got to be something that's in it for you. And for me, those are two things that are, it's funny, I've been carrying around I have a little tiny journal. It's like it will fit in the palm of your hand. It's like 2 by 3 inches or something. It's ridiculously little. Mm-hmm. And it makes me ridiculously happy. You can't hardly put anything in it. It's great for Paris cafes because you have no elbow room. So you can actually just kind of have your elbows on your belly and do a little tiny something, you know. And then I thought when I was doing it the other day, I thought, there's nothing here like that I could go to somebody and show them and go, and they go, wow, look at that. Well, no, they're not. But it makes every day when I do one, I find that the rest of the day my heart feels lighter. And that's kind of my sign that that's for me, you know. And so I just feel really, really fortunate that I'm getting at this time in my life to be able to do two things, writing and painting, that are good for me. So, yeah.
Right.
Oh, that was sort of a great answer to how are you.
It's a long answer.
I'm telling you. No, it's a good one. And I have to laugh, Dreema, having gone through your Instagram account this week. I feel like I've gotten up close.
You've had to go through all the stuff. I know.
I loved it. And you may be sitting at that cafe with your elbows tucked in, but I know you've got a great-looking cappuccino on the table. And a pastry that has me right now so flipping hungry. I'm going through it.
I know.
This is dangerous. Look how good this looks. Oh,
it's Paris, like, you know. You just kind of have to go ahead and indulge while you're here and drink probably more coffee than you should and more pastries than you should, and it's just
I definitely noticed.
Kind of, why not?
Your coffee.
I'm sorry for the feed. Yeah, that was
more coffee than wine. That was good.
It does. I actually wanted one before we talked today, and I thought I can't load up on the coffee. Because between my southern accent and talking fast, you all will need to put have subtitles or something with it. So, I've tried to stay away from the coffee a little bit today so I wouldn't talk too fast. But, yeah.
Well, okay. Well, I think you're living a dream that I didn't even know I had. It's like, wow, now I want to do that. But before I start to figure out if I could ever do something like that, I would like to sort of go back to sort of the beginning. And maybe get some historical background here. And I said to my husband last night, this is great. This is my chance to ask anything I ever wanted to ask of Dreema. So,
I know. It's horrible. That's why people are nervous when they're guests. Because it's on a public platform that you can now just pin somebody down. You're like, oh, dear.
Is it true?
Don't give you any ideas. I know.
So if you go back to the very start, I'm kind of curious as to when, was it always there, what I would call that Dreema style? You know, it's no surprise. Your work is so distinctive in every way, sort of the color especially. But was it always that way? Is that the way you started the very first when you were painting?
No. And it's interesting, and I will share this because I think it will be hopefully something that's encouraging to someone that's, you know, much younger than me that's just now getting started and perhaps worrying about finding a style or connecting with something. And not just younger in years, but sometimes just younger in getting started on this, you know, maybe a little bit started later. It's interesting to me now because when I do look back at previous work, because I started as a watercolor, so I did watercolor for like 15 years pretty much exclusively. And I was drawn to that because I have a brother that's an artist, and he was a watercolorist, and that was what I was exposed to. And I still love the medium. I mean, that's why I'm doing my watercolor journaling, because it's different than oils, but I really, both of those things really fit me. They suit my heart. And so when I started with the watercolors and everything, they were my subject matter and how I approached them, everything was very, very different. But it's interesting to me now when I look back, I see different pieces that were kind of glimmers in a way of where I was headed. And it's funny how life does it, where it kind of, you do something and you kind of circle back around. And even the way that I journal in my watercolor journal now was something that started happening many years later when I lived in San Diego. And I did them kind of on the side. I did my bigger watercolors that were very planned and very detailed. And then on the side, I was kind of doing these little quick things to sell to tourists when they came in. And they were so easy for me to do. They were like eating ice cream. I was kind of like, well, gosh, this isn't work. I'm having a good time doing this. What happened? But the funny thing is those were kind of more my nature. They were splashy and colorful and everything. And even though they were watercolor, they were kind of more where my heart wanted to begin. I do think that a lot of times as artists, it's encouraging to know that whatever you're drawn to, whatever you're interested in, you may not be there yet, but it is no doubt the direction that you're being pulled in, and your work will get there. Because I remember my first time of seeing Impressionist work in an art museum. And I, you know, growing up where I did and kind of my life, earlier life, I was not exposed to any of that. And I'm self-taught. I did not go to art school or anything like that. And I had never been to a major museum until I was in my 30s. And I remember when I saw the Impressionist work, and I think it was the Met where I saw this, my first kind of, because I saw a lot in 1 year.
Yes, that was the right place to
I
go.
Remember from yes, and from that moment forward, I was so dissatisfied with what I was doing. It was like I had put on a horsehair suit. I did not like what my work looked like. I didn't. It took me a long time to find my way. But from that point on, I was like, I like color. I like impressionist style. I like a looser style. I like the emotional content of it rather than it being a direct hit of exactly describing what it is. It's more for me, you know, looking at it because art is subjective, the impressionist work really delivered high on emotional content of when I looked at it, how it made me feel when I looked at it. And I wanted that. And so then I really started paying attention. Anybody that I could see that either had brushwork that I liked or colors that I liked that I was like, I want to know what they know, whether it was a book or someone that I could get to study with. But again, long answer, so we maybe only get through two of these questions here while we're on the show.
You know, though, I have to say, I think that really, that message is so true for all of us, right? Sometimes you don't even know what you like until you've seen enough variety, and then something will speak to you, and you start realizing that's really, I think, one of the best tools for anyone who's trying to figure out. You know, they always ask, how do you know when you find your style? And maybe you just need to keep looking until you get that sort of, you know, quiver that says, this is what I like. Even if it's different than what you're doing.
Notice what you notice.
Yeah.
I remember buying a book. It was a book that had different, I think it was called Weekend with the Impressionist or something. I can remember. It was a little tiny book, like an 8x8 book. And the reason I bought it, because when I looked inside, there wasn't as many pieces that called to me, but it had a cover by Pierre Bonnard on the dust jacket, dust cover. And I was so caught by that painting, I couldn't, like, walk out and leave the book. I was like, I don't even know the name of the painting. I don't know if I can find it. I like the way the colors are reproduced. I've got to have that. So I did. And many years later, as I was cleaning off one of my bookshelves for a move, I pulled it out and realized that years after that, I did a painting that had a very similar quality of feel of colors, arrangement, even what the subject matter was. And I thought that's fascinating how the mind works because it, and I say again that to encourage people, when you are, notice what you notice, pay attention to what you're paying attention to what catches you, because it's almost like yourself calling back to yourself, going, this is you, come over here.
Completely.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Dreema, we've known each other almost 10 years, I believe. Did you ever imagine that your art writing and teaching would take you to where you are today? I mean, if you would have, you know, crystal balled it 10 years ago, do you think you ever would have imagined this is what you'd be doing?
I've always dreamed. I've always had hope. For to be specific, no, but I've always, you know, had aspirations, I guess, of doing my art and being happy while I was doing it.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what I've jokingly said, but it is very true that the things when I was younger that I thought needed to happen in order for me to be a success never happened. And for me, when I was younger, and there weren't, you know, things were a little different than before technology that we have now, the platform that we have now to be out there with. But in my mind, I mean, I remember writing it down. I'm sure I've got it in some of my scrappy journals somewhere. But, you know, I felt like I needed to be in some, I do, there's, I've got some really disreputable ones I've moved in so many times. But I remember believing at that time that I, you know, in order to be successful, that I would need to, you know, A, get really, 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 really good at what I'm doing, B, get accepted in some major galleries, C, you know, win some major competitions, D, be published in some major art publications. Well, guess how many of those things have happened that I've just clicked off there.
Right.
You know, but, Yeah, so the path to be, but and that's one of the reasons too. I think it's important for artists to, and for people, for creative people to ask themselves, how do I define success? What would that look like for me? And obviously, there's monetary goals. A lot of times we have, if we want to be able to do this as a living and not be doing a day job and then doing this. There's things there, but also beyond that, you want to be aware of. When does that button feels like it gets switched to the on position
right.
that you really are feeling fulfilled in what you're doing? And it's different for each person, you
know,
because a lot of people have gone that route where they've won major competitions and they've been in major galleries and stuff. And it was the right thing at the right time for them. And so I think it's good because I have since realized for me on a personal level, if my works were in a gallery and I was doing a certain style of paintings and they were wanting those over and over, even though I tend to paint the subjects that I love over and over, the minute if you told me that that's what you expected of me, I probably
mm-hmm.
would feel like I was choking as a creative cycle. Well, I liked it, but now that you told me I need to do that, I don't know how I feel about that, you know?
Oh, that's so true. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I think that would be hard. And a lot of times if you're in a gallery and they're there as a business and they're selling, and they know their clientele like a certain genre
mm-hmm.
or style of painting. They need for you to almost be staying in that mode because that's what their clientele are expecting.
Right.
And as a creative person, sometimes that can be hard. So for me, I think that the path that I was meant to be on is how it's happened because it fits my nature better. So it's important to ask yourself, how do you define that? What does that look like for you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Yeah, I like the what's that look like for you? You know, that ability
mm-hmm.
to envision more is so important. Kind of what
it is.
I agree.
It is.
Gets you through
and,
the days
and
that
as,
aren't so
as
fun.
People, you want it to fold into the rest of your life, too. You know, it has to fit the balance,
right.
the whole thing of what you're doing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Well, I think I know how you're going to answer the next question, but I'm going to go ahead and talk about it a little bit anyway, which is obviously, you know, the world today is very different than when you started painting. Even, I mean, my goodness, we've said it over and over, even 12 years ago, the difference between then and now. But in terms of sort of your art life, what do you think the biggest change is that you've personally noticed?
I'm assuming you're taking this a little bit from the it's hard to from the business side of just the things changing.
Well, I guess what I'm thinking is, you know, here we are operating as, you know, sort of working artists, and I can't help but think you're going to tell me it's social media because I know. this has been remarkable. I feel like it's like an industrial revolution on another scale, right? And for someone who's an artist, it seems like there's maybe a conflict if you think about it on a simple level. Artists and technology, we're not supposed to really get into it, but we all have. 10, 12 years ago, I'm sure selling your paintings online was a huge deal, and it was maybe just an inkling for most of us. And today you're totally online. Like when you think about the online classes, it's remarkable. So I guess my question is, how have you kept up with all the technological changes and still sort of had your very happy life as an artist?
Oh, well, listen, it is perfect, Margaret, let me tell you. Anybody knows anything behind the scenes, it's like whatever Instagram and Facebook look like, you know, that's not the reality. Those perfectly posed pictures, no, that's not actually happening. And I have to say since I've been in Paris, we did some photos back in May because I'm working on another course coming up, and my hair was not cooperative. So even though I tried to pay money to have that look better, that didn't happen. So if you've got curly hair, it kind of has a life of its own. Twofold, I think. One, I think technology is actually a wonderful advantage for artists because the biggest shift between what I get to do now and where I was at years ago is gatekeepers. And in the day, whenever you were doing art and stuff in the 80s and 90s, and I can speak of that because that's when I was out there, you know, working, trying to do, have shows and getting galleries and different things like that, you really were, you didn't have a platform. And so you really were, it was really, it was almost like there was a gatekeeper. There was someone between you and the audience or the public that you desired to have see your work, whether it was publication in a magazine, getting into a show, getting into a gallery. You didn't get to really pick that. You could do your work, you could submit it, you could contact, you could do all those things, but it was that ultimate decision was up to someone else. And with where we are with technology now, I think Van Gogh and Monet and Renoir and all these people would have been all over this like a cheap suit because it takes it straight to the public. If you want to be on Facebook or Instagram or have a blog, if you've got something to say, you actually, no one has to give you permission to do that, which is huge.
I love it. The democratization of art, right? Available to everyone.
It's a huge advantage. I mean, remember, and I'm probably going to butcher the word, but you remember the Impressionists, they, when they originally couldn't get in the salon, they went and held their own show and called it like the Salon des Refusés or something like that. I'm just I apologize for just killing that word, but basically because they were rejected from the major salon shows of their day, they did their own thing.
Right.
And so with the technology that we have now, each of us does have that opportunity to be able to put it out there and let the public decide, do they connect, do they does your work resonate with them? And that's a huge, huge bonus. To the part of it, all the stuff that I do, I would say this, and I think with I'm appreciative of having the opportunity on platforms to be able to reach out and hopefully put your work in front of somebody that hasn't seen it before. And it is, I think for artists, it's always been this, and I think it's something you just kind of have to take it as it comes. And it does cut into your creative time. It's part of, if you want to kind of be able to have a life doing it, you almost have to, there's a book called Essentialism that the guy talks about, the writer talks about trade-offs. And it's kind of like if you do one thing, you're kind of trading off time on something else. You just have to be aware of that. Because I do have help on the things that I do online and everything, but then there's a lot of the writing and the copy I still is me. You know, I have people placing it in certain, you know, setting the times up for stuff. But I'm still, because I want that part, that's my voice, and so I want to be that.
Of course.
And it's there is time involved in doing that. Well, Leslie, you know, and Margaret, you know, when you're out there and you're putting out, it doesn't seem like it should take as much time as it does. But when you do it, actually. It does. It does. It takes time to be thoughtful about what you're going to say. And because you want to share something that you feel like is either going to, you know, add a little something to somebody's day, either with information or maybe make them smile or make them feel optimistic or some hope about things, you know. And so that takes a little bit of more time sometimes than what we think. But I think it's part – I think all those things are good because I think that they do – in their own way kind of help expand us in how we look at the world, how we look at our art and how people connect with it. It gives us a chance, again, on the two-way thing, when you're doing it, you also see how people are responding to what you do, which when things used to just be hanging in a gallery and you weren't there, you didn't know. So
That's a very good point. Yeah, that is a very good point.
Yeah. So, Dreama, one of the things about you that I think people love, well, one of the many, is the fact that you're so positive and you're spiritual and you are, I don't know, I think the best word is happy. Yeah. I think I could say that that comes to you easily every day. Does it?
Have you ever seen all those paintings where they had that big WIP?
Yeah.
And they posted work in progress. That's life. I always think Dr. Phil said, he always said something I love, that he said life isn't cured, it's managed. I remind myself of that a lot. And a lot of what I think, way back there when I first started getting online and blogging, it did occur to me that I wanted what I do and what I provide to be a soft place for people to land.
I love that.
Life can be tough. It is tough a lot of times. I mean, all of us, by the time you, if you've been managed to hang around a few decades, you don't don't walk away unscathed. You've had things hit you, broadside you. And so that bigger picture, I think what helps me do that, because I don't wake up happy every day. I have times that I'm stressed about things or worried about things. You know, my mom had, she's doing fine now, but she, in February, she'd had a stroke. And there's things like that that kind of like you're trying to continue doing what you're doing, but part of your mind is kind of more than you realize. I'm stressed about those things, you know. But I am mindful that I want to put out good. I need it. And so I guess we give what we are hoping we'll get back. I want to put out as much good as I can while I'm here. And for me, I think the thing that helps keep me pulled back, because it is a daily thing. I mean, I'm someone who I read a lot. I take time for quiet time and things like that, because I really find for myself that I need to do that and hit the reset button every day, because once you head out into the world, there's a lot of things that can happen in the run of the day. And I find that if I don't kind of feed my spirit and put something back in, that I can get really frayed and fractured from it. And so it's kind of a job one for me, is to get up in the morning and have that quiet time and read something that helps me reset things to where I kind of keep my priorities, you know. And for me, the main thing I try to really focus on is love. And I feel if I can do that, I always do better. So I'm always kind of trying to reaching for things that kind of help keep me on the path on that. And if I can kind of keep things that order, then it helps me. And so that's kind of my thing. And so, and I, again, that's kind of what occurred to me years ago when I started with my blog, because I will be having a blog-iversary next February 28th. It'll be 10 years since I went online.
How
and
many years?
I remember at some point I was kind of 10 years. Yeah, 10.
10 years. Wow.
Yeah,
fantastic.
10 years. Like, it's been like 700 or 800 blog posts. I haven't blogged as much in the last few years as I did when I was first started blogging.
Yeah.
But it occurred to me that I did want, because the news and a lot of things are negative, and I wanted when people, if they hung out with me, I wanted it to be something good for them, that when they left, spending time with me, whether it was in person or whether it was something that I had written, that they, when they left, that they stood a little taller and their shoulders set a little better and they lifted their head a little higher, that they felt good for that time.
Sure.
Yeah. 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 It's so nice to think that it's like your influence is beyond just their painting. And that's kind of important, because not everyone's going to be a fabulous painter, you know, but they still come away with a message and maybe a feeling from their interactions. Kind of cool. Something to aim for.
Oh, I agree.
Anyway. Yeah. So we have, you know, listeners, all of whom like adore Dreema. I can't tell you how many people like responded to me or reached out, and they were like, oh my gosh, Dreema's, I'm definitely listening live. Like, people were so excited. And I think, you know, one of the things is that we've all, yes, it's so wonderful. And we have all watched you, obviously, do these transitions, not so much a transition, but, you know, you are not a one-dimensional woman, to say the least. Artist, teacher, I know at your core, a writer, because even the small things you write, I think, are as, they reflect sort of the same style as your painting. You know, they are joyful and optimistic and encouraging and all of that. So, you know, the Dreema guru, I'm kind of curious if you can tell us just a little bit about some of the maybe positive influences or encounters you met as you sort of developed and added these facets to your, at least your online persona.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there were any negative ones.
Well, there actually was one. And this is an interesting question to me. It made me think. It's one of the things that's good about questions. That's why I used to, when I was teaching my live workshops, I had a list of questions to tell people, like, do these when you get home, because it does help you to understand yourself better and what makes you tick and what floats your boat and all those things which are important, you know. But I kind of thought back in my life of the people. And one, I have two people in my family, obviously all of your family you love and everything, but my brother was he's older than me, and he was an artist when I was growing up, and he was one person that probably a lot of people thought that I studied with him, because when I first started painting my style looked like him, but it didn't. He was too busy. But his influence in my life was kind of like I saw someone do this successfully, so I knew it was possible, and it was someone that I knew, and that changed things, because if it had been someone maybe that I read about in a magazine or something, maybe it wouldn't have seemed as real to me. But he was my brother, and I saw him good, and I thought, well, this is possible, you know. And and he was that part was good for me. I have two sisters, and one of them were really close in age, and we were always really tight growing up. And she's still my, you know, text her at 3 a.m. in the morning, and she'll if she's up and gets it, she'll text back, and we have long conversations. But she's always been so supportive of me that it has made a huge difference, because having people around you that love you and support you, you can do it without, but boy, does it help if you have it, you know. And then I think Hedy Moran, huge influence on my painting, wonderful teacher. She still teaches at Scottsdale. I just have a deep heart for her, because she is someone who really, I felt like, unlocked a lot for me when watching her paint. And she was the one, I went to her, at the time my husband and I had a restaurant, and I was working there and trying to do art on the side, and my dad was sick, there was a whole lot going on, and I went to her and I said, Hedy, you know, how can I get better at what I'm doing? And she said, words that came out of her mouth, nothing I ever expected to say, she said, teach.
Oh.
And it had never crossed my mind to teach, and she said, you know, teaching, you learn a lot through teaching. And so I have to credit her, because after that, it was several years after that before I ever got around to doing it, but that stayed in my mind when she told me that. Kevin McPherson I studied with, and just an excellent instructor. And he was, there's a few people, I studied with a lot of people as far as just taking workshops and stuff through the years. And all of them I gained something from, but there are always, I think, people that we connect with or they stand out to us for one reason or another. And he's a really excellent instructor. And just kind of laid back and just puts it out there. And he has a way of distilling things down to where you can understand it. For me, I could wrap my head around the concept. And so he was really, really good. Wolf Kahn was one that I studied with briefly. And Wolf Kahn, he was the person that, for me, gave me permission to unabashedly love color for the sake of color. That I didn't have to justify it. I didn't have to explain it away. I didn't have to have a limited palette. He didn't say any of those things. He said it by the fact that I got to see a body of his work. I took a 2-day workshop with him, and he walked through, and he had a painting that he had called it, he titled it the name of the color because he'd found a new color that he loved. And so the name of the painting was Ode to Pearlene Red. And that was, it was like all of a sudden the things that had kind of been pinned up inside of me that I felt like I had not acknowledged, but there was part of me said, you can't do that. It, you know, if you're going, that's not a true color. That's not exactly how it appears. The shadows aren't that, or this should be this. Whenever I looked at his work, I was like, so it's okay to just love something because you love it. You don't have to justify it or necessarily explain it to someone else. And that was one of those things. It's funny because I look back and I see different things that were, it was like a chink in the armor fell out, you know. And it was, again, years before my work really reflected that. But those were things that happened that really, really made a difference. And then, obviously, you know, through the years I look around and I think, I know I've had a lot of collectors that bought my work that did it as much to show me love as they did because they loved the painting. You kind of know sometimes when people are doing it that they're kind of like your cheerleader. They're hoping you'll do well, so they're going to go ahead and put some money behind you or give you, you know, buy this or do that. Mm-hmm. And I've had that happen at different times that I really needed it. It was kind of what kept me going, either financially or it kept me kept my head in the game, you know, made me feel decent enough about what I was doing to be able to move forward. So, you know, never underestimate the power that we have in someone else's life to reach in and do one thing. Sometimes it makes a difference because you don't know where people are at, and sometimes one move at one time can make a huge difference for that person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll finish this up with the most non-positive influence I've had. The girl inside of me that doesn't always believe in me.
Hmm. Hmm.
Yeah, we all.
I've never met her.
We don't know her by different names.
We don't know who she is. So Jerima, this whole journey that you've been on has been just so incredible to watch, and you really have, I do believe, kind of shaped the art world. And if somebody was going to ask, give me one secret being successful, maybe this comes from an artist who's just starting out, not really knowing what to do.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And it's okay if you have more than one, but ideally, is there one piece of advice, and maybe it's teaching, like you just said, but I'm curious what that would be.
It's not a specific piece of advice in terms of do this and do this and do this, because not everybody's going to be drawn to teaching. I didn't know when I started that I would actually love it, and I absolutely fell head over heels in love with it. It's same thing like with writing. I should have known that. You know, I've read all my life. Why would I be surprised that I actually like to write? But I do, and it was a surprise to me. Like, oh, I actually like doing this, and teaching was that for me. The thing, it's only two words, piece of advice I would give to anybody wherever they are with whatever they're doing that I didn't have, and it may be different for each person, but pick yourself. That's a Seth Godin quote.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this kind of goes back to, I used to think, even when I started teaching, I'll give this as an example, even when I started teaching, I first thought I need to be amazing and people will invite me to teach. I'm waiting for the invitation to come in. No. I thought that I had to somehow have somebody say, oh, Drayma, we've heard of you and we would love for you to come and teach. And, well, that boat never pulled in. And so I thought, well, what's plan B here? So plan B was that I set up a workshop myself, and I worked it really hard to get it filled. I, you know, put together everything for it. I found a location that I could do it. And the first year that I taught, I had, you know, I had workshops that had maybe five or six people in them, and I had one that was full. But I was all over the board with it, but I stuck with it. But the thing was I didn't wait for someone else to say, because the funny thing is the year that I did that, I had actually contacted an art center, and I thought, and I told, you know, I had examples of my work and everything. And I was like, you know, I'm available to teach and everything. And they were all sewed up. They were not interested at all. And it's funny because if I had taken that as a no, then I would have never done anything. But it was kind of like in this climate that we're in now for artists, you know, don't wait for a gallery to do something for you. If that happens, it's wonderful. Because after the fact, once I started teaching, then I got invites from lots of art organizations and still do. But it didn't start out that way. I picked myself and put myself out there and took the chances and worked hard. And out of that, wound up being able to do it, you know. And there's so many things like that with your work that if you pick yourself rather than hoping that, because I think, I don't know that everybody thought that way, but I think I had a lot of myth going on there that this is how it's supposed to work. And sometimes it does. I mean, sometimes people do get contacted and things happen and their career just takes off and it's amazing. But it's the same thing like when you see sometimes people who are actors or, you know, musicians and things like that, and you think they got discovered or someone went to them, but the truth is they have, a lot of times, like with musicians, they've played in every bar between here and Timbuktu, and people would say, oh, they got lucky overnight, and they didn't. They just kept staying at it. They kept working. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of it is, that would be my advice, is pick yourself. If there's something that you really want to do with your art or something, you know, if you see your work on products, you know, a lot of people are really good at the licensing and going that direction. If it's something that you think, man, what I'm doing, I'd love to see it on dinnerware and all that kind of stuff, then start working that direction yourself and figuring out what the steps are, because it is so different for each of us. I kind of think what you think you would be happy doing.
Sure.
I love that. It's another one of those, like, positive steps you can take. You know, believing in yourself is the hardest thing to do, but it's the best investment, right? It pays off.
It is.
So,
truly.
Well, I'm super excited to talk about this next little piece here. I should confess, I have taken one of the few DREMA / Leslie workshops. I don't know. I remember contacting a friend and saying, let's go to Pasadena. She's like, what? So, and I know how hard it was to get in. Literally, this gal and I were on the phone, and it was like, okay, if we don't both get in, then we're not doing it. It was like 1, 2, 3, click, because your workshops would post and sell out. It would be immediate. And I actually remember speaking to Leslie Sato when you did your first online workshop. And we were like, ooh, Dreamers, it's really nice. I think she had someone film this. We were like, ooh.
She's a bit professional.
It looks so professional. And now you have this great set of classes or workshops online that have this travel component. And I have to say, I have been all over it. I've watched every one of those little videos that you've done, you know, as intros. And
yeah,
it's really interesting to me because I can't believe the appeal. So the one you've got going up now, even though you're talking to us from Paris, France, is Timeless Tuscany. And I kind of watched it and I thought, this is really something, because students can get the experience. You know, someone who has always dreamed of traveling to Europe and painting and all of that, a lot of people, it's just they can't do it or they can't do it right now.
Yeah.
And I can see where, well, I can see where you drink a lot of coffee, eat a lot of pastry. It looks like an awfully, like, amazing, delicious painting life. But I'm kind of curious, like, can you tell us how this was born and what was the reaction to the ones that you did in Paris, and just like explain all this.
Okay. I have three online courses, and I have a fourth that is in the works, which is why I'm in Paris right now. But the first one was Dreamless Paint, and I filmed it locally. I mean, I had professional videographers and everything on it, but I knew from the time that we started that kind of my bigger vision was, and I wasn't for sure how we could pull it off, but we did, because we, you know, with the first course, we had so many people there's over 3,000 people taking the courses now. So there's a lot of people
who've
been in them. And so it's been a delight, because what had happened, I think things are born out of, you know, our own experiences and what, you look at something and you think, man, I remember whenever, it's twofold. One, I think my inspiration for creating this one is, I know that as an artist, as a painter, that sometimes our biggest enemy is ourselves, and we want to get better and we want to shove at our easel, but it's, we let life get in the way. And part of the reason that happens is because we don't have confidence that when we show up, we're going to walk away with something that we feel good about. But the only way for that to happen is to keep showing up, to keep showing up, and to keep showing up. And out of showing up, the work takes care of itself. It's a promise. And so with doing these courses, I really felt like that this was something that for people, no matter what's going on in their life, that they can flip on their computer and immerse themselves in it and hopefully find something there that ignites them and keeps reigniting and reigniting. And that was one of the reasons that I really, because I knew when I was teaching live workshops, it was hard because I actually had kind of maxed out as to how many I could do and how many people I could see in the run of the year, and it was still not enough. And I think for me with teaching, I love painting and I love the color and I love the looseness, and I'm always happy to share that. But my bigger mission has always been for people to really hold a mirror up to themselves and really see their own abilities, because I believe in that. I know that they have that, and it's not something for the chosen few. I don't believe it. I think creativity is here in all of us. And so to have the opportunity to create something that could actually have a shelf life and could reach a lot of people super appealed to me. And then when I got to do we did one for Provence and now Tuscany, those were actually born out of the fact that I had gone through a spell in my life when I had mentioned earlier, but my husband and I had a restaurant. We were really, anybody that's ever had a restaurant, you know, it kind of nails your feet to the floor, because it was a lot of talk. We were the ones in there every day. Oh, yes. We were in there, you know, every day, all, you know, just working. And my father was sick, and art had really crept away from me. It was not, I remember even going down and closing up the studio space I had, and I cried when I did. It still makes me sad when I think about it, because at the time it was a tough time in my life, and it was felt like I was just kind of like folding my dreams up and sticking them in a drawer. And when my dad was sick, I had a book I had gotten from Amazon, a used book, and it was on Italy. And I packed it around with me. I would take it to the hospice center and stuff and back. And it was kind of like an escape for me to look at all that imagery and think, because I loved everything that was there and I wanted to paint it. And so when the opportunity came with these courses, I thought, this is a chance. It's not the same as getting to go yourself. I would never say that. It's not. I would that everybody could go and stand and see some of these places in person themselves. But life sometimes doesn't allow for that. We have kids, we have parents, we have jobs, we have finances. There's so many things a lot of times that we're juggling that it's not possible to do that. So
right.
With the courses, I'm able to, as much as I can, immerse people in that energy and do it online and do it where it fits their schedule and stuff. And so I have to say, Margaret and Leslie both, when I it's Leslie, it's like, you know, we get carried away doing the workshops and stuff. It's like, you're like, and then we can do this, and then we could, then we can teach all day and have 32 people over for dinner. It's like,
sure.
Okay, we'll do that. Well, when I built the Provence and Tuscany courses, I had the girl, I have a team in Australia that does all the website design and everything, and I kept sending her stuff, and she kept sending back. She says, this is really big. This is really a big course. Wow, there's a lot of stuff. And to this day, I did not realize it, because I was like, well, I want people to have, obviously I knew all the paintings that I had picked out. We've got 9 paintings in the course, 9 start to finish, stroke for stroke paintings. But I also knew I wanted them to have quiet time. So we had filmed quiet time meditation videos that are done in Tuscany. And then I wanted them to have recipes. So we have recipes, and I wanted them to learn a little bit of the language. You got to do that. So we have things on that and printouts. And then I wanted them to have music to listen to while they were painting. So I have a Spotify playlist with soundtracks on it for that. I have, I'm trying to think, it's ridiculous. I have movie recommendations, book recommendations, how to put Tuscany into your home, a whole bunch of information on that to kind of make it more real to you. And tons of bonus photos and all kinds of stuff. But it was like, it really, I look back now and I think, no wonder Lisa was saying that. She was drowning, because I was kept sending stuff over. And she's like, because we had talked about it, but I think she didn't realize, and I had kind of got carried away. And then we do the big thing that we do that's so fun on these is, I call them adventure videos, but each week we have an adventure that we go out and do, visit some towns, meet some people. Like in Tuscany, we did Franco, we went to his home and made the homemade pizza, and we were really because we had a guy that knew. It's so much fun, but I wanted to be able to wrap that and put it together for people enough that they really felt like they had a taste of it as much as you can virtually. So I've had so much fun doing it. It's a lot of work, a lot of work. But
Dreama, that's because you have poured yourself and your heart 100% into this, and it shows, and it's just, it has just set the bar so high, and it's just so incredible. It really is. I couldn't be happier for you, because you deserve this, and you have worked so hard, and wow, I'm going to cry too.
don't cry. Everybody stop crying. I want to say that, like, I love that it's so professionally produced. It's beautiful, but it's still so intimate, because it feels like such a personal experience. So I hope I know that's what you were shooting for. And I guess I just wanted to tell
came through. Thank you. Because that's what I wanted. I have to say, it's funny. I think when you have a dream that comes to you, the people that need to help, because this is something I couldn't have done this by myself. And it's like the people that needed to be part of this, were the right people showed up. I mean, it's the videographer I use, happens to live across the street from me. If you can believe that. Yes. And he so gets, it's funny because Ron and I joke and say he's the child we never had. He's the son we never had, because he's like Ron and me. But he gets me, and I'm saying, I want to do that. And so like when we were you know, going through the villages and stuff, I told him, I want people to have the feeling like if they're standing here. And so when he was with me, he would stand, and then he would take the camera and swing it up, just like you naturally do when you go into one of these little courtyard areas or something.
Mm-hmm.
You stand and take it all in. So he didn't just go in and keep a straight shot. He went
right.
in and actually kind of the way he did it was very natural feeling for the way that you would do if you were standing there looking at it in person. And
mm-hmm.
there were things like that that I couldn't have even asked for. I didn't know to ask for. I just told him, I said, I really want people, when they consume this, for it to really feel as much as we can to make it feel like that they are here, that they are in it, doing it. And so he was just so adept at doing that. And then the gal that I have for photography, Stella Byerlin, is just heart and soul, just the person that you want for this. I told her, I said, you're like what they said about Monet. He was only an eye, but my God, what an eye. Because we all have cameras, we all have digital devices, but what she sees through her camera is different. And she captures stuff that is just so amazing because it's storytelling. And so I'm happy for that. And the truth is, this is the thing. At the end of the day on this kind of stuff, I feel like that these things come together for the people that it does call to them and it connects with them, that it's a lot of things that we're working together for their behalf. Because it wasn't just about me doing this and people showing up to help me. It's like it's that 1 + 1 = 10. Because the right people come together, because what they're doing is actually has a life that goes out, and it's the right thing for somebody else that maybe it makes my heart happy to think about people who can't travel right now because of health or because they have a spouse they're caring for, or they have, a child at home, or they're working and stuff, and this is something they can do. It makes me so happy to think of it. Not everybody's in that position, but at different times in their life, yearn for something more to be inspired with and can't do it right then. I was that person.
I keep thinking of the person who is intimidated by classes, you know, who doesn't feel like they're, good enough or something. They can do this at their own pace, and I'd love that, because they can do it and only their eyes have to see it if that's what they're comfortable with.
That's such a good point, Margaret.
Because,
we've all had that intimidation factor of going into, if you take a class
100%.
Or a workshop, it's really hard. I mean, even if you've been painting for a while, there's still that self-consciousness wants to creep in. You almost feel like a third grader. You won't put your arm over your paper so nobody can see what you're doing, because it's just that self-consciousness that's there. And so you're right. It's when anything that you're doing like this, we just live in a great age that we can do things like this. And I did want to say, the course is open right now for enrollment, because we were going to – it was supposed to end yesterday, and you'd email me and said, it would be a shame since we're doing the show Thursday.
I
told Rob, he's like, I know, we'll leave it open. So the link is on my website.
Glad.
And yeah.
And how long will it be open till?
I'll leave it open for a few days here for give people a chance if they hear the broadcast late stuff to get in. Because I wouldn't want anybody to, because it's a...
Thank you.
We have a good time. Well, and the other advantage of doing these too that I love is the Facebook groups that we have, because everybody gets in at the same time. There's a lot of excitement and stuff, and people. You don't have to do it, but it's a real safe place to share your work and have conversations about Italy right now.
I have to ask, what's up next, my dear? Can you tell us?
I can't even compare to all the stuff that you've got going on, Leslie, but I do have stuff coming.
Stop.
You guys, I love it.
Just a few things. They haven't given me a date. It's supposed to come in. I thought it might be in before we got on the phone today, but there's a new magazine coming out called In Her Studio. And I'll have an article in that, and don't know when it's coming out, but they do. It's a quarterly issue. Well, yay, because it's in her studio. It's in her studio.
Yeah, I know. That's awesome.
I've got a brand new website. DreamOfTolPerry.com
There you go.
It was in terrible need of a facelift, and it's getting one, and it's. Knock on wood here, we're going to be launching it next month in October.
Oh, how exciting.
I'm excited about it because we've got a lot of stuff. We've got a Dreamspiration section on it that's going to have photographs to paint from that people can download and paint from. We're going to have some meditation videos. Just going to have some really fun stuff on the new website. So I'm excited to be finally get. This has been a huge, when you've been online 10 years and you've got over 700 blog posts, it's like wading through deep water trying to get home. It's like, you just, it's a lot. It's a lot to get it all switched around. So that's happening.
Wow.
I'm going to have a new shop. The shop's not going to open right away, but I'm going to be carrying my favorite journal from Italy. I have worked with, I had a liaison to work with Fabriano paper in Italy.
Oh.
And it's a journal that I love, and we have our own color on it. And so that's going to be on the shop.
And
site.
What color would that be?
purple.
I thought so.
Shocking. He told me the color you want, and they got as close as they could to
it
because it's a paper, and you know, the paper really absorbs. He's like, this is close as we can. I said, that'll work. We're happy with that.
Does it have that nice deckel edge?
Oh, listen, this journal is one to drool over. The paper is soft, and it's deckled all the way around, and then the cover is handmade. And so it's pressed, and they're very roughly, they're very uneven, they're very not, none of them two of a kind, and they have embossed the three graces on the front of it. It's just, it's a beautiful, beautiful journal.
Oh,
it is actually my favorite. I've had so many people ask about that finally thought we should try to figure out a way to, because you can't get them anywhere. You can't get them online or anything. I've tried because I thought, well, if I can just, you know, let people know this is where you can go get them, but you can't. So, I have a couple more things. One, I'm kind of working on. I had to kind of make a list. I was like, I've got so much going on. I'll try to mention it all here. We're kind of in the works for the one of the things that's come about. Like I had mentioned earlier, we have so many people who've taken the online courses, and it's well over 3,000 now. That a lot of them have really connected in our Facebook groups, and I feel like that they would. Some of them have taken live workshops with me. Many of them have not. And so I'm not teaching a traditional workshop, but I'm going to have some Dreamspiration meetups in 2019 so people can have a chance to meet each other. I'll probably do like a live demo there, but I want people to have a chance to connect in person if they desire that. So that's one of the things I'm going to be working on for next year. And then last but not least, the reason I'm here is my next course that I'm working on is Postcards from Paris. And it's going to be a lot of small paintings, and it's going to be a combination. I'm going to let people, it's like pick the ending that you want on your movie. You can either pick it and have all the same content and get oil paintings, or you can pick have the same content, except it's going to go the direction of my watercolor journaling, because I have a lot of people interested in that.
Fun.
My watercolor journaling. Yeah. So that's why I'm here, is kind of working to put all that together, and I wanted to be in Paris while we're kind of pulling all the inspiration together for the course. So,
is that enough to
That's amazing
for the next year?
Yeah, is that all?
It's a lot, but it is.
Wow,
it is. Yeah,
that is fantastic.
That's great. This does sound like dream come true stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so. I love that we get to ask you those questions, Dreema, that we came up with so long ago.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Oh, I know.
Yeah. That I'm now, we
again,
now
need
to ask.
In a weird twist of events, the questions get turned on me. You know, I didn't plan that whenever we were doing these.
Probably not, huh?
How many years ago?
It cracks me up. But first question is, what music do you listen to? And I'm not even going to say in your studio because you're now painting in Paris or probably all the time. And when you paint, what music is it?
Okay. I use Spotify app on my phone, and so I always have my music with me, and I love listening. And I'm an eclectic mix. For each of the courses I've done, like for Provence and Tuscany, I'd mentioned earlier, but I have a playlist of like 100 songs on those. So I'm a bit obsessive about music. You know, it's funny because I get inspired in sections of what I'm doing. Like right now while I'm working on the Paris course and over here where Chopin played music, I'm like kind of into that now, which I wasn't before. I'm all over the board because I grew up in Eastern Kentucky. So, you know, it's not above me to get beyond having a really good piece of bluegrass music on. Alison Krauss,
sure.
Something like that. But I love like acoustic guitar is probably the first thing I love to listen to a lot. And so Ed Gerhardt and Alexander Musco, I listen to a lot. John Mayer, David Gray. I love artists that have really positive lyrics in their music, like Andy Irie and Ben Rector. And then obviously there's the all-time favorites we all have, like Michael Bublé and Tony Bennett and Rosemary Clooney. And then my sister, I listen to my sister sing, so she does a lot of Rosemary Clooney type music, so I have her on a lot. So, yeah.
Hey, Margaret.
A big mix.
You're
going to
be in
music.
Charge for a second. I just have a quick delivery, okay?
No problem.
So take over the show. Hold on.
I promise not to sink the ship. So we're going to go on to the next question then, which is, what is your favorite art book?
This was a hard one when I looked at this because that has changed over the years, and I think it's true for all of us. It's kind of where you are at the time that something really just, like, you know, hammers you. You're like, oh, my gosh, where's this book been?
Yeah.
I have to say one of the – it's a classic book, is The Art Spirit, is one of my favorite books by Robert Henri. And then Vincent by Himself is one of my favorites because it has Vincent's letters. And I found that when I read his letters, I really connected with him. And I liked it because it was, I've since learned, like when I look at that, I think I really want to hear what the artist has to say, not what an art critic or what a historian wrote about them, but if you hear it in their own words, then you get to draw your own conclusions from it.
Yeah.
And so
I'm back.
Isn't that great? By himself. Yeah. I love that. And then my current one that I've been, that's old news to everybody because it's been out for 3 years, is Big Magic. Love that. Elizabeth Gilbert book.
Yeah. That's actually a good one to recommend to anybody,
Okay, so which artist, which artist from history, dead or alive, would you want to study with?
Dead or alive, it sounds like a Western, doesn't it?
I know, it does.
Who wrote that? Who wrote that question? I know that question. You know, again, it's one of those things. It could change probably from year to year. But Dan McCall, you remember when we had him on the AHA show
years
ago, Leslie?
Yeah.
I loved his philosophy then. I always loved his work. His work has gone, you know, I don't know when it kind of started changing, went in a new direction. And I love the fact that he did that because I think it's so wonderful for artists to have the liberty to continue to grow and evolve, and his work has, and it's beautiful. And I have his book, and I loved his philosophy and stuff. And when we had him on the show, I loved his philosophy. So I really, he would be somebody probably, if I could just hang out with him a little bit, I would enjoy it. Sergei Bongart for Color.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the color. Love his stuff. Those would be probably two that, and I actually took a little workshop back in January or February from artists that I had loved his work and absolutely loved his spirit. There's something about it for me. It's kind of got to have the whole package. Jerry Frescia, and he's an American who lives in Italy in Lake Como area. And when I was in Florida, I had known he was going to be down there. He's been in there a couple of years, and I was teaching, and it was always a conflict, and it worked out this year because I was there and not teaching that I was able to go and hang out with him a few days. And I absolutely – I delighted watching him work, and I delighted in his outlook and what he had to say. So, yeah, I always give long answers and more than what you ask for, so there you go.
I like it.
Yes,
all
right, for a favorite. You know, favorite artist. I know, I'm sorry. Yeah.
So, if you could add any piece of work to your own collection, whose would it be and why?
Are you going to give me a check? Is the first thing to do this with.
Of course.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Aha, because it's turning so much money.
exactly.
You know, again, these are hard questions, but I think, oddly enough, probably three pieces.
Yeah.
A John Singer Sargent watercolor.
Mm-hmm.
Agree.
A water lily painting by Monet. I would take one from the Léon Giraud Museum in a heartbeat, just rolling those suckers
up and
walk out with it.
Of course. Yeah.
And then Starry Night by Van Gogh.
Oh, really?
And obviously two of those are very, very famous. Yeah. But I love Van Gogh's work. Love Van Gogh's work. So, and then, but the John Singer Sargent, I saw a watercolor exhibit in at LACMA several years ago. And I've always been a fan of his work. You know, obviously his oils and portraits are amazing, and the watercolors. And a lot of times the watercolors you don't get to see as often because they don't parade them out as much, just to keep them safe, I guess, from fading and everything. But it was a lot of scenes that he had done in Italy, and it was just mesmerizing. I know I probably walked around with my jaw hung open the entire time I was there, but yeah,
I love it.
So that would be my dream. Yeah.
Well, this will be a, well, I don't know, maybe you'll answer something differently, but do you have a favorite paint color?
A favorite paint color? Hmm. You know, I love blues a lot, and purples. And
yes,
I think because they kind of have a soothing energy to them. But the truth is no color is a standalone color. It appears the way it does because of what's surrounding it that makes it feel happier, lighter, or whatever the case may be. And I've not really had as much time to play with them yet as I will. But when here I pick, and you can get them in the States, but I don't know if I'm saying it right or not. So excuse anybody if I'm not saying it right. With the Charvin, Charvin oils, I picked up. I went to the local art store here, and I got, they have them boxed. They should have never done this to me, but they had them boxed in sets of the hues of the color, like you could buy a whole lot of blues or a whole lot of greens. And I was like, yeah, and a whole bunch of reds. And, I mean, if they had had the blues, I would have just gotten probably one or two tubes.
Of course.
But they had them in a box. So
you
like
had
5 months later, I did. It was like, I was worried about my luggage being heavy when I got here, and then I go and buy all these oil paints to schlep back home. But it's just fun to play with them. So, yeah.
Oh, what a treat. All right. Do you have a studio tip that you would want to share with our listeners?
Yes. I don't know that it would come under a tip, I guess, but one of my favorite tools is a Kemper tool, Kemper wipeout tool. And I had a student bring it to me several years ago in a workshop and said, have you ever tried signing your paintings? Because I paint a la prima, wet into wet, so you can sign. And normally what I was doing was letting it dry and then go back in and sign it or trying to scratch into it. And the Kemper tool has two tips on it. One's a point and one's a wedge. And I signed it, and I was like, man, this is so effortless. It's like holding a pencil. You can sign into the paint while it's wet. It looks great. We're good to go. And then I found as I was walking around teaching that I was carrying it with me. And one day I'm like, as I've said earlier, alluded to earlier, I always back into things more than I actually have a genius idea about it. But I was working on someone's painting, and there was like a kind of a build-up paint in one area that we were needing to redesign. And we couldn't find the palette knife or something, and I had the tool, and I took the little and just kind of started scraping it off of that area. And it was nice because you could go in a very small area, just pull out enough paint to redirect what was happening there. And I was like, oh, this is really handy for this. And then since then, I've got to where I may, at the end of a painting, when it's completely done, go back in and just use it to draw with on top of the paint that's there because I like the look of it. So it's a really multi-purpose tool. It's great for being able to remove small sections of paint. I mean, you can take a lot, but if you've just got one little area and you're thinking everything else is working for me, but this part here, I've got too much paint to go back in on it. It needs to just kind of go back down to the canvas. Kemper wipeout tool is great for that.
Dreama, isn't it good to know we still haven't mastered the dog barking problem on this show in 8 years? Bort, he's killing me. I've been gone for a week. He has been at my side since I walked in the door last night. And that darn dog. But anyway. Yeah, he's my bud. Okay, last question.
last question.
I'm hiding in the living room. He found me. Is what's on your easel right now?
Well, it's probably more like what's in my journal because I'm doing watercolor journaling a lot while I'm over here.
Yeah. Perfect.
So that's yeah, I've brought a couple of them with me, so I'm having a lot of fun doing that. So that's just it's like getting to eat gelato and getting paid for it, you know. So.
Mm-hmm. So it's a wonderful street scene, or what was your latest one that you did?
In my journal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, I'm just trying to think what because I've been all over the place. Gosh, you just threw me under the bus on that one. I'm trying to think because my little one, I've done a bunch. I've done the carousel and the Eiffel. I'm fixated on carousels right now, so I've been putting those in there in flower shops and just different things. I'm just trying to think was the last place that I had it out. What I did, it was just a little window. Ron and I were having breakfast at one of the little local cafes here, and there was a window across the street that the light was hitting it and stuff. And I was like, journal moment. Put it out and did it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is so incredible.
Yeah.
Well, okay, Margaret, thank you so much for putting this together. And Dreema, it was so great to have you back. Wow.
Oh, I know. It's good to be back. I think I had told you both, it's kind of sad that we have to try to catch up on a podcast, but we did. But
know,
everybody's busy, which is everybody. All the
listeners,
too, are busy, too. It's just life these days. It's everybody's
yeah.
life. Plates are full. So, yeah, but it's so good to be back and have some good conversations. And thanks for the opportunity, actually, for me to be able to talk about some of the things that I'm doing and what's coming up, because that helps me, too, and I appreciate it, really do.
Well,
you
we
can
love
be a guest
it. That's
every
sure.
month.
Yeah,
it's really been, yeah, your journey has been so much fun to be a part of. I tell you, it's really incredible. So, we will be back
time
next week. We'll pretend we know what our show is. We'll pretend that the show notes are written, but
done.
Dreema knows that that's not true. Where
you
right,
have to go
you would have a, every once in a while, you would have a topic picked out that you had already announced, and I'm like, I'd have that moment, you know, both would like, I don't know if there's actually enough stuff to do a show on this topic, but somehow we came through. So
there you go.
Margaret's going, oh, boy.
No, I would imagine it's evolved into this is the early days, but I remember we would come up sometimes and think, oh, yeah, that would be a good topic. And then you actually start researching, you're like, okay, I've got three sentences. I don't think we can make a show out of this. We've already answered the three sentences and we're done. Yeah. Short show.
Change direction.
I know.
It's been wonderful. Thank you so much, girls.
Thank you, and have
well,
a rest of your time in France, and I'll take over when I get there, I promise.
That's right.
Sounds like a plan. I like it.
Yeah. All right. Well, take care. Thanks again, Dreema. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you.